Diese Podcast-Episode wird präsentiert von H2Hub. H2Hub ist der europäische Hub für Wasserstoff-Startups. Er vernetzt Gründer mit Unternehmen, Investoren und Forschungseinrichtungen in der Welt des Wasserstoffs. Warum? Um die Entwicklung innovativer Wasserstoffideen voranzutreiben. Bei Veranstaltungen bietet er Startups aus Europa und Israel sowie Unternehmen die Möglichkeit, sich auszutauschen und zu vernetzen. Im eigenen Accelerator-Programm Sprint und Bootcamp profitieren Startups von maßgeschneiderten Coachings mit Mentoren und Industrieexperten. Weitere Informationen zu den Events und Programmen des H2Hub auf www.h2hub.com. Herzlich willkommen an der Hydrogen Bar. Wir begrüßen euch zu einer neuen Folge eures Lieblingspodcasts rund um die Themen Wasserstoff und Brennstoffzelle. Und heute, Johannes, servus, du bist natürlich auch dabei mit der ersten Folge unseres Specials, dem H2Hub Startup Special.
Ja, genau. Herzlich willkommen. And with this, we switch also to English to welcome not only you listeners, but also our guest. Today, Flor de Dufour. I hope I pronounced your name right, visited us, or is visiting us here at the Hydrogen Bar. Hello. Very warm welcome to you.
Hi, Florian. Yeah, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. In fact, we feel honored that you have the time to visit us here at the bar. You and your company are a part of the H2Hub universe, or H2Hub Hydroverse, as they call it. And in fact, a few weeks ago, you and your company have won the H2Hub Hydroverse Convention Award, if I'm not mistaken, as it was officially called, for the best startup pitch in the Hydroverse Convention in summer of this year in Essen. Thank you very much once again for your time, and thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here, Florian. Hi.
Great. It's a pleasure, indeed. I think we're one of the veterans of H2Hub, so glad to keep our going further. Yeah, partners like you.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a short introduction about yourself, and especially like how you got into this role of being a veteran of H2Hub? Like, when did you start working in this hydrogen world?
Yes, happy to, of course. So who am I, aside of being French in Munich, mother of two kids? Aside of that, I'm basically an energy markets and regulation nerd that fell in love with data and tech. My background is actually in energy markets and regulation. I hold a master's from Strasbourg in Paris in international energy markets from about 10 years ago. I'm hugely passionate about these topics, actually, of markets and regulation. A lot of people hate it. I love it. It's quite technical. In the end, it's the backbone of our energy transition. Policies, if done right, is a tremendously impactful tool on our energy transition. And that has been really in focus for me for the past 10 years. Having said that, I really have the temperament of a business developer. Whatever I do, I end up playing the role of a business developer. And that's what I've been doing really from the start of my career, actually. So I started with a pretty classical corporate career. I started at Engie and then at E.ON. My first real job was in gas, actually, in natural gas. I speak Russian, so people love to put me in the box of, oh, perfect, you're going to negotiate long-term gas contracts with Moscow, which I did, which was fun. Turned out it was way too slow for me, and I moved to other sides of the business. I moved to the US to start up the energy storage business, moved back to Europe in charge of renewables development topics. And then 6 years ago, I fell in love with data. I discovered that whatever has a bit of impact in our energy transition has a very strong data analytics component. And I felt like I had to get my hands dirty with the topic. So I myself started programming on my free time during, actually during my first maternity leave, I earned 2 certificates in programming. And it was a confirmation for me that, okay, I really want to get into that because this is where it's happening, the energy transition. And from there, I joined E.ON's chief data officer together with an initial team. We grew the team from 5 to 80 people in just a few years. That was tremendous fun. And prior to Pond 12, I was in charge of data monetization for the E.ON group. So really how to turn data from assets from customers, outside data as well, into value for the benefit of the energy transition. Developing IP, protecting IP, and commercializing IP. And it's really actually in that context that a few things happened that led me to Point 12. What happened? The war in Ukraine hit. Heart of the war in Ukraine was my topics. Energy markets, regulation, dependence, energy security. And suddenly Europe realized that something, and especially Germany, something that they took for granted of having supply of gas in that case, was not true anymore. And I realized, okay, I really need to put my skills to the benefit of something that really matters. And I started looking for other opportunities. I felt like I need to jump off the big boat, as much as I like it, the big young boat. And then something else happened. I met with Quentin and Erica, my now co-founders. Quentin was the rock star software developer of E.ON. Very humble, very talented, brilliant guy. And Erica is our chief product officer. I hired her into E.ON, and she's a fantastic product designer in the most noble sense of the term, of really turning very complex topics and heavy duty data into usable products that people love to use. And that's really a talent. And there we found there was this one time where we had coffee together, and it was about discussing each other's options of what are we going to do next. I had several job offers on the table, and after a few minutes, it was just very clear that I would say no to everything and we would launch Point 12. We had a strong team, strong founder market fit, and that was fantastic.
Yeah, so was it really the case that... Was it really the case that you have asked the other two guys if they want to join you in funding the company, or was this an idea that you
developed
together and brought to life together?
So actually, we first found each other. So the way it started actually was not even me; it was Erica telling me, "But Flora, it's obvious you just need to launch your own company." And not without saying it, it was very clear that she would be part of it. and Quentin as well. It was just a very, very obvious, and we're famous. Actually, we three are French, and so we were called the French Connection at E.ON. So people knew that when we worked together, we move mountains. So it's really interesting, actually. Point 12 is a people first story. And what drives us, that we share, the three of us, is industrial decarbonization. This is really what we care about. And this is actually how we converge onto hydrogen. Hydrogen being so powerful and this missing link for industrial decarbonization to really take place. So it was kind of an obvious alignment of planets, the way it started.
Hey. So basically then this decarbonization was really the driving factor for your for your founding a company, but still kind of the product that you develop it then kind of afterwards, that you say, okay, we want to do something, let's find a product? Or was it more like, okay, we have the idea how we can really decarbonize?
So we had had industrial decarbonization as a core theme. We had hydrogen as a major theme of excitement. To be fair, mostly for me, because I'm a huge nerd about energy markets. And what is hydrogen markets is, you know, you take electricity markets, gas markets, and carbon markets, regulation and norms, and you do a big salad and you get, you know, the hydrogen landscape. It's really a mess, but for me, it's really fun actually to navigate this complexity. So there was also like a natural personal attraction to the topic and a personal belief that hydrogen is really one of the must move fast solution for our net zero path. Electrification came as a second step, actually, when we actually started researching very intensively, and we ran a lot of interviews. I think we counted more than 75 interviews, expert interviews, potential customer interviews, and we refined as we went. So we had experience in building new products and building new company ideas, because it's also what I had been doing for the past few years at E.ON. So we really were super strict about following, in particular, the lean startup methodology of, you know, not having an idea and trying to push it to the market, but to be close to, as close as possible from the market and from potential customers from the start, to let the market pull you in the direction that it needs, so that we actually build a technology that people need, people want, that is solving a real problem. So we really were very open and very obsessional with customer centricity as we started developing and validating the core value propositions of Point.
Was it really the case that these customers, these clients that you mentioned and that you interviewed, were telling you that they are annoyed by the solution that is currently provided by the market? So the way of hydrogen being certified at the moment, was this really a feedback that your clients gave you that the way it's currently handled needs to be improved?
No.
Or was this something that you have discovered that there might be a potential in this direction?
Yes, it's a very good question, because no, you're right. People didn't tell us, hey, we are unsatisfied with the way certification takes place today, and, you know, we need other solutions. And that's actually the whole subtlety about being customer-centric, is that your customers don't tell you what to do. They talk about what they know and their current problems. And actually, quite interestingly, we're at a stage of the market. Yeah. I mean, it's still an early stage market, and we're very aware of that. We're still at a stage of the market where certification does not necessarily come in the top three pains of developers and operators of hydrogen or hydrogen derivatives projects. Not at all. What do people mention? Offtake. We don't have sufficient offtake. They mention infrastructure. There isn't sufficient infrastructure for transportation, for compression, for storage. And they mention sometimes, hey, regulatory landscape is unclear. And what we discovered, and, you know, took a lot of conversation to really come down to this understanding, but certification is kind of an overlaying or cross-cutting topic that is crucial to solving the top two, three pains of the market. Why? Because take offtake, right? Mm-hmm. So people are struggling to get offtakers to commit. You'd say, okay, certification has nothing to do with that. But in fact, when you go really in conversations also with off-takers, I mean, what's the only reason why they're switching to hydrogen? In order to decarbonize. So if they don't get a certificate together with the commodity that they buy, they don't buy. There is no market. So certification is a major enabler.
Yeah.
Also, trust is absolutely central. Right? So there cannot be a doubt that the commodity which is purchased is actually, you know, higher in carbon than what it actually claims that it is. If you take all the pains of the market, you often come to certification as an underlying thing. Let's take bankability, right? So nowadays, how to finance multi-million euro capex projects for transporting or producing hydrogen or hydrogen derivatives? Well, one of the first questions that the bank is going to ask, okay, so is this future proof? Is this green? And this is how we developed almost our line of thought with Point 12, because spoiler, Point 12 goes eventually way beyond hydrogen. Hydrogen is really our starting point, because it's where the the pain around certification is the most acute. But this is how we found this fundamental line of thought of saying, hey, guys, in the net zero industry, there is no space for a commodity which is not certified green. And as a result, we need to have the safest way and continuous way, technology-enabled way of assessing life. What is the carbon intensity and the sustainability impact of a commodity all along its value chain? So this is actually really almost our pitch in saying, guys, if you want to be there in 20 years, you need to have certification as part of your DNA from the start. And you need to have sustainability traceability as one of the core technology layers in your stack. And work with Pond12 because we will do this for you. So really need to develop this value proposition in discussion with customers and saying, guys, you need to think of us as this technology layer on top that manages traceability and certification at scale across borders so you can get rid of this complexity and make sure that it's done in the best, safest way possible.
Maybe one question, because I think we jumped into the whole topic without really like wrapping around what your product is or what do you offer to your customers. I mean, I got now, or we got our listeners, I'm sure, got now, it's about certification of hydrogen. But can you describe shortly, like, what is it that you offer with Pond12 to your customers?
Of course. So Pond12, let's start indeed with the basics. Pond12 is a technology company. We're based in Munich. Pond12 is an IoT and SaaS, software as a service, as a SaaS platform that enables energy-intensive goods producers to easily and continuously certify what they produce as being green. What do we mean by energy-intensive goods? We mean the heart of the commodities which are produced and consumed by our industry. Gases, fuels, chemicals, and materials, glass, steel, etc. We start very focused with hydrogen and hydrogen derivatives, as I said before, because these are the products for which the pain around certification is so acute. Mm-hmm. The demands from customers and the demands from the regulator are so high and intricate and hard to comply with that this is the biggest and first nut that we want to crack. For hydrogen producers today, what we sell to them is a 90% time savings. We let them outsource the complexity of certification to us. And symbolically in the back, what do? We do three things. So there's an IoT part, which comes down to accessing all the on-site data, which is required for certification to take place. The gateway, it's an encryption hardware and a bunch of adapters so that we can speak all the protocols that we need to speak to easily streamline access to data from an industrial site. That's the first component. And then we do two things. One thing that we do is actually turning all the regulatory and compliance layers into an intricate but accurate decision tree. RED II, delegated acts, of course, but also CBAM, EU ETS constraints, EU taxonomy. So all this is turned into a decision tree on one end. And on the other end, we actually measure, based on a distinct methodology, the carbon intensity of a batch at any point of time. Once you have the carbon intensity, you can actually match your batch and classify your batch based on the decision tree. And the last thing we do is simply put back office automation. So all the steps that need to take place so that volumes are entered on online platforms and the issuance is requested to the certificates registry. And then the certificate is issued, transferred, canceled, and all this play around between electricity and molecules. And from one molecule to the next, for example, from hydrogen to ammonia. So this is traceability story. And in the end, core of what we do is turning complex supply chain data into an accurate and understandable sustainability story that can travel together with the product.
Mm-hmm. So when I when I look at the job that I'm working in, as my main point where I spend time in my life, so to say, I also work for a certification company.
Yes.
And I know from what we are doing that certification is in many cases a very slow and very manual, so to say, business. In fact, when we do a product certification, we generally have a six eyes principle, which means that we have a project manager and we have a technical certifier and we have a representative from the certification body. And all of these guys need to have a look on the certification. All of these guys have to check the reports. All of these guys have to check the data. There's a lot of manual work that needs to be done, of course, before a certification can be issued. And I'm not saying that this is the perfect way. Oh God, it's not. Definitely not. But of course, the reason why it is done like that is that the certification body wants to make absolutely sure that everything is in order and everything is correct. And also, of course, somebody has to be responsible for the certification that is issued in the end. And so that's why, of course, there are these different roles regarding technical certifier and certification body and so on. And if I understand your product correctly, so what you are doing with point 12, you are more or less doing an automatic certification that would not necessarily involve any, human, so to say, to be a part of the process. Is this something that could be a problem for you, that you are, like turning the certification system as we have it in certification companies all over the world on its head, or is this something that is quite easily, I'd say, possible to establish a new way of certifying a product?
Yes. I have two answers to your question, Martin. The first answer to your question is, as we speak today, we don't replace anybody. By law, you still need an audit. You still need someone to actually, you know, look at the data and place the stamp. And this needs to be an accredited body by the certification scheme. So, you know, there are rules and we cannot bend the rules. So my first immediate answer is, you know, the product as it is designed today does not replace anybody. It just enables coordination around the topic of certification, because what you describe, this complexity within the certification body, someone like TÜV SÜD, is a reality, right? It's complex, it's tedious, it's manual work. You need to sample out the data. You work really on almost a paper-based way of working, which of course is very little scalable, right? So this is one part of the problem. Yeah. But that's not even to mention the problem of how certification is done within your customers. Part of the problem of certification is that not only it's complex to perform the verification, but also it's kind of everyone and no one's topic. In the hydrogen space, certification is a topic who is relevant to everyone, but kind of no one's topic. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of like a supply chain topic. It's a bit of an ESG topic or a compliance topic. So the regulatory team will be part of it. It's somehow a commercial topic as well. It's an IT topic because there's data involved. And what it means, the consequence is that there is very often very poor coordination around the topic of certification. And as a result, it's a super costly topic. It costs dozens of thousands of euros per year to actually certify the molecules coming out of the plant. So that's the short answer in saying, hey, already just by streamlining the processes, automating just the reporting and collecting in a very precise way everything which is required for a set of molecules to be certified as green, this is already a huge help. And this is why we're starting with this, because this is what is really, really made necessary by the complexity of this field today. But my second answer to your question is a bit more disruptive, and you would expect that. I don't think that this manual process of verification future-proof. because auditors are human, and there's lots of good things about that. But in a way, it means it's also prone to error. It's prone to fraud. And increasingly, net zero is a topic where we can't get it wrong. And this once per year audit, for example, it's hard to imagine that it can work really in the future at scale. So much data, I mean, when you start to look at the delegated acts and you start to see that the regulator is requiring that there's a verification at some point with an hourly granularity that indeed an electrolyzer consumes electricity from renewable sources, that this verification needs to take place on an hourly basis. I mean, none of the producers today have the tools to deliver on, you know, on this set of tasks that hourly verification requires. So the more disruptive approach of 2012 is indeed to develop an IoT and SaaS technology which is so safe, and that leaves absolutely no space for any data manipulation, that actually it becomes a trusted technology backbone, on top of which certification schemes can say, hey, this is my list of requirements, so you can be called green, but I want you to use the 0.12 technology because I know that it's so solid that, you know, no fraud or no trust deficit can happen on top of it. So, yeah, let's say longer term, yes, it's about turning around the way certification takes place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that gives us, I would say, a lot to think. I mean, I would have a lot of more questions based on this. Unfortunately, we are running in our time limit, and I think we need to continue next week then to go here into more details. But for the moment, thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being here. And thank you for sharing all these super fascinating insights about kind of, yeah, the background and how you got into 0.12 energy and how you founded it.
With pleasure, Johannes, Martin, thank you for the good conversation.
Thank you very much, Flore. And to all of our listeners, as always, if you want to reach out, if you have remarks, if you have questions, then feel free, of course, to use the email address to get in contact with us, contact@hydrogenbar.de, or you can also visit the website, of course, and you can reach the website either by using hydrogenbar.net or, of course, hydrogenbar.de, and you will also find a contact form on the website that you can use for getting in contact with us. And also, of course, if you have questions for Flore, then you can use the contact form and we'll forward your messages to her. And as Johannes was saying, we'll continue our talk with Flore next week. Thank you so much for tuning in for this week. We hope we hear
goodbye.